Welcome to the Sports Tech Research Podcast. We connect research-driven professionals working within the sports technology ecosystem. The show is brought to you by STRN, Sports Tech Research Network. Your host for today is Christophe de Meij.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again in the Sports Tech Research Podcast. I'm happy that today I have Carlos Balsalobre in our show. I hope I pronounced that well, Carlos. I just mentioned to him, we have been following each other now for a while, and I was very curious to learn more about his work. So welcome, Carlos, in the show.
No, my pleasure, Christophe. And don't worry about the name. It's difficult even in Spanish. So
maybe you should start with pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah, well in Spain, the correct pronunciation, you know, will be Carlos Balsalobre. But that you did just fine.
I was close.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, that's that. Carlos, could you shortly introduce yourself and your field of expertise?
Okay, well, so I have a PhD in sports science, and yes, but that's what I'm basically working on. And in the field of sports science, I've always been interested in, especially in strength and conditioning and measurement tools to evaluate performance. And well, over the years, I've been more and more interested in sports technology. Until I decided that I wanted to get in the field for real. So so I started first learning how to develop apps and then actually developing them.
Yeah, and you're still working in the university?
Yeah. I'm lecturing in biomechanics here in Madrid. And I always want to still be connected to the, you know, to the real world, to the field. So I consult a few athletes in the strength and conditioning program. I did my PhD like I told you before, in sports science, and it was with a group of middle and long distance runners here in Spain back in 2015. And ever since, I've been working with a few Olympics on the team with the strength training, etc. So yes, that's basically my background: researcher, developer, coach.
That's a really inspiring combination of skills, and also I think one of the reasons why I wanted to speak with you in the podcast, to get to know a little bit the motivations behind and also what you're doing exactly. There are not that many people, I think, who have both the academic side of things and also actively translate what they're doing all the way into tools that can be practically used. So yeah, where to start? Maybe for the listeners, it's good to explain a little bit the kind of tools that you have developed and the actual benefit that they deliver for the people working in the field.
Okay, yeah, so I'm basically developing smartphone apps. That's what interests me the most, because my idea has always been, you know, to bring the measurement tools to the pocket of the end user, not just an academic or a researcher or someone in a big club with big resources. Most people don't have access to laboratory equipment, but everybody has a smartphone, at least one, and many times two or even more. So yes, I'm focused on smartphones, and I have developed the different apps to measure performance just with the phone itself. So I don't want to connect with other gadgets. I mean, that's great, that's okay, and there are many apps that connect to many devices, and that's awesome. But that's not what I'm interested the most. So for example, my most popular app is named MyJumps 2, and it's an app that records the athlete and allows you to measure with high accuracy the jump profile, the height, the power, the force, etc. And in this sense, I have developed many other apps related to different aspects of sports performance.
Mm-hmm. What is often seen in the academic world is that people are developing tools to then use them for their research, but not always for in the fields.
Yeah.
And that's some often I think, why? Yeah. why are you doing this?
It's funny because as an academic, I saw that many times when I submitted the actual research papers to journals, when I validated the apps, you know, validation papers of the apps, and many times the reviewers told me, why didn't you use a more standardized way to place the camera instead of just holding it on your hand? Why didn't you use a tripod or measure things? And I always say, because people in the real field won't use a tripod, or they just will pick the phone and record the athlete. So
yeah. I'm really interested also, as I said, in the motivations behind, and I can ask the next question, I mean, in two ways. One is, where is your motivation to include the end user needs from the beginning? Otherwise stated, why do you think that many other researchers don't do that? Could you, because often that it's an interesting thing to see, there are not that many people who actively, as I said, translate their research results into those tools. So I'm interested in your motivations behind and your view on this issue, so to say.
Yeah, well, my motivation was basically driven by a lack of resources in my own university. So when I was doing my PhD, it was very difficult for me to loan the devices and to get permissions to get the devices out of the laboratory to the high performance center. And when I was able to do that, it was difficult because it was just for a short amount of time. And of course, there were bulky devices, a lot of kilos to carry out in the field, etc. So I was always thinking about, why do I need to do that? It should be possible to measure these things that are not that difficult to measure with other methods. But there weren't other methods in the phones, for example. You know, previous attempts to provide laboratory measurement to the field. But yes, linking that to your other question, I honestly don't know why it wasn't done before by someone else. I don't know. In my experience, I have seen in people, especially in top academics, you know, cathedratics and some of, you know, dinosaurs on the university, that wouldn't see the apps as a serious tool. I've been told that, you know, this is not serious. This is a smartphone you have.
Yeah. It's not a Vicon, or it's not the Qualysys. Or whatever it is.
It's impossible that this has enough quality. And I think that maybe people didn't do that in the past because they wouldn't, you know, believe that it would provide the degree of accuracy that it actually delivers.
I think in some cases, many people, maybe they want to do that, but they don't have the skills to actually design and develop the application. So you did that then yourself? So you learned those skills, or did you collaborate with external people to make the app, or did it all by yourself, so to say?
Yeah, I did it all by myself. So it was a difficult task to complete, you know, to learn how to code. But actually, it seemed harder than what it actually was. I always tell my students that coding is like, you know, like learning a new language. Actually, it's easier than learning a new language that you know zero about. I think that's actually a pretty important skill set for future sports scientists, or current sports scientists and students. And I always tell people that it might look even scary, all the lines of code, etc., but it's not that that difficult. It's all based in logic. There are many tutorials online and courses. For example, I learned on an online course in a webpage called udemy.com. And I basically spent like maybe 6 months full time with the, well, not full time. I was doing other things, but many times per year doing this course. And then when I got the enough skills, I started with the first app and then the others.
So you also got the freedom, so to say, from your supervisors in the days to spend your time on.
Absolutely. Well, in the time I was developing the app, I wasn't actually working at the university. I was like a PhD. Well, maybe it's surprising for some of your listeners because it's different from country to country. But for example, here in Spain, it's not that common to have a paid PhD position. So you are just someone who loves a certain topic and research whenever you can or where you want, no? So in just have a, well.
But you didn't have an income at the time then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't have. So I was living with my parents, decided to spend my time with this.
It's a good example, I think, that indeed sometimes lack of resources stimulates taking initiatives, and it also relates a bit to another question that I had is, do you also see yourself as an entrepreneur? Because some people who have different kinds of apps and so on, they would maybe rather quickly think, okay, maybe we should start a spin-off company or startup specifically to put these things in the market. How do you see this in relation to your activities so far? Do you also see yourself as an entrepreneur and it also relates, of course, to the apps that you actually developed? Do people need to pay for them? Yes, no? Is it publicly available? Or what's the model?
Well, it's not like I don't like the term entrepreneur. It's just that I don't use it on myself because I mostly see myself as an academic. But the truth is that my primary source of income right now is from the apps, and I'm more and more motivated about bringing, you know, the research to the actual field. And entrepreneurship is something that is more and more interesting to me because maybe it's not the same in every country, but as I see it, in the general academic field in the world, there is a big, in my opinion, and I might be wrong, but there is a big disconnection from the academic system to the real world.
That's why we launched that Sports Tech Research Network initiative to actually bring together people who want to bridge that gap. It's also one of the reasons why we are having this this chat. But please continue. I interrupted you.
No. I just was saying that yes, it's a field of entrepreneurship that I think it's really interesting. And even from an academic position I have at the university, I always try to teach the students that probably that's a great way to make a living, you know, to have a source of income and to make what you want. For example, here in Spain, the degrees of unemployment is, especially in the young people, is very high.
Yeah, and it's nice to see that you are actually giving the example, so to say, for your students. I can imagine it's inspiring for them to see. To go back to the apps themselves, explain a little bit, let's say, the added value of testing certain metrics, then of course using the information to improve training, decrease the risk of injury and so on. Could you elaborate a little bit on translation of the results that come out of the app and how they could actually make a change for the athletes?
Okay, so basically most of my apps, not all my apps, but most of my apps are based on video analysis. And the good thing with video analysis is that considering that almost every phone out there for a few years now have a slow motion capabilities, you can actually measure the movement of the athlete, you know, the time it takes to make a jump or the contact on the floor or the velocity of a barbell you lift, etc., with a very, very good degree of accuracy. So with the apps, you can measure things like jump height, running speed, contact times while running, range of motion, and many different things. So I think that one added value, which to be honest, I didn't think about it in the past, but more and more people, probably motivated for the COVID-19 situation, are using the apps to test remotely, you know, because since you are analyzing a video, you can ask the athlete, please record one video of yourself every day in the morning jumping, and then I would analyze, and I will use that measure of daily power performance in the jump as a measure of, for example, of fatigue or a status of performance.
Interesting. How many people are using your apps?
Well, that's kind of difficult for me to know because from a statistics point of view, I can only know the number of downloads. But I know that, for example, if I have an Apple ID account or Google Play account, I can download the app in every device I have with the same account. So I know, for example, that there are clubs that use an institutional account. So they download the app and it counts as one download, but then it is shared with the full staff. But right now I have something like 100,000 downloads worldwide. So it's
that's an impressive number.
Yeah, it's a big number in my opinion.
But you're also a great communicator on social media, so probably that helps as well to promote the technologies that you have developed. Another question that I always ask is, okay, with every project there come some challenges, so some critical hurdles to overcome. What are those in your case? What have been those in your case in the past? And maybe you have current challenges that you want to speak about and people could reach out to you for in order to help.
Well, maybe some people think that my main challenge is technology, because these smartphones, of course, are not as capable of laboratory equipment. But I will say that my main challenge has been, you know, people, especially academics, because it was difficult in the beginning to convince people that this actually works. So I have received in the past a lot of critics from academics, especially from my own country, which is funny. Most of the time I'm more highly appreciated outside.
I can imagine. And you're doing most of the validation studies yourself, or do you also have partner organizations, other researchers that are also using the app in their studies?
Well, the first validation study I always try to do myself, not because I want to be the first one, but just because while I'm developing the app, at the same time, I try to do an internal validation just to be sure that what I'm releasing is something acceptable. But yes, I think that actually external validations from independent researchers who are not related to me or the apps are of course not paid for doing the validation is what is most important. So people actually believe that research, you know, is legit.
And you mentioned finding the right people is your biggest challenge. Could you elaborate a little bit more? What's the type of people you are looking for?
Yeah, fortunately, I know a lot of researchers that that love and use and spread the words about the apps. But it was probably maybe in the beginning, especially here in Spain, because we have here a strong tradition in velocity-based training. Okay, we have great researchers in the topic. And in the beginning, when I released an app called MyLive, which is an app that measure kind of like a linear transducer, linear position transducer, you know, to measure the velocity of the barbell, I got many criticisms from skeptical users of this paradigm, the velocity-based training. I think that motivated by, I don't know, maybe fear of not being the ones in the top position, because at that point, the apps were getting very, very popular, actually. So I don't know. I think that that ego is a big problem. And I've seen that in the past because, well, the thing is that, well, the app costs 10 euros. No license, no subscription. And those people in Spain selling a linear transducer of 2,000 euros.
Mm-hmm. were they got a bit worried.
Yeah, we're having problems with that. So they decided to create a campaign to try to demonstrate that this is bullshit. But not just in that specific case. It's just that at the beginning it was difficult for the people to actually believe that the apps work. But fortunately, I found other researchers very very open minded and who love technology and said that okay, of course this will never be as accurate as a laboratory equipment, but it's accurate enough for most of the people out there.
Yeah, and one of the key things here in the whole story is, of course, the starting point is it's based on real life needs and things that people in sports actually can use, and then the research questions are based upon that. Where in many research projects, of course, you start with the academic curiosity. And then try to study things and then you come up with final conclusions. But in the end, there is no real product out of it or no real solution that could actually be used in the field. So what you mentioned that you have maybe more positive reactions coming from the field is, I think, also a logic thing if you see what you have been doing. All right, interesting. My next question relates a little bit to not only your type of work, but more the general thing that within sports tech, we have, of course, an issue of many technologies that are not validated and we don't really know if they are accurate enough and reliable and valid. And in the end, if we use them, if they are also effective in what we're trying to accomplish. I think we are now in the last couple of years, you see many initiatives from people that try to do something about this. And this also motivates me as an academic business developer, trying to, in the end, come up with evidence-based solutions. What is still needed, in your opinion, in order to change this? I think you are a good example. It's your personal story. This is how you have realized what you have done so far by learning app development skills. I think also by communicating very much on social media what you have been doing, telling your story, promoting the applications that you already have. We discussed a bit the challenges and so on. Do you have any other ideas like how we as a sports tech community could improve the level of evidence of the technologies out there? It's a general question, but maybe you have some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, well, like we say in Spain, it's something like throwing rocks to my own roof. It's like talking bad of myself. But I think it's important to understand that a sport technology is not that important. I mean, it's an excellent tool to help the practitioner to make decisions. But I have seen many times, even in top elite clubs, that people is using and collecting data for the sake of it, but they are not actually using it, or they have a huge amount of data that they can't even process. It's impossible for them. So I think that it's really important to keep creating new technologies that are more accessible and more accurate and more validated, etc. We also need to, you know, to don't lose the focus on what is really important and why are doing this. What are we going to do with that?
Exactly. I totally agree with that. And in some of the conversations that I had with people working in the field, they often then remark that many academics are studying things that they don't need. And they say like, why don't you study things that are based on the needs? What do you think from your experience are the current needs that you say like, look, if people could do research and development on these particular aspects, that would really, in the end, result in a solution that actually many people in your area of strength and conditioning and training and so on could apply?
Well, I think that from a practitioner point of view, and this might seem too simplistic, but I always say that what the coach or the practitioner needs is like a traffic light system. I am red or orange or green to train. So basically, I am following the same program I decided to follow, or should I change or use other loads, another volume, another intensity. So I think what is needed is to develop tools, or to keep developing tools. Of course, there are many out there that allows to collect data in a simple, very fast way, because many times you are using, I don't know, a lot of GPS and accelerometer data, etc., that takes 3 or 4 hours at least to analyze. So what is needed is to have a set of tools on the field that during the actual practice could give us some information. And many people might think that it should be completely complex and a lot of variables, but in many cases, it's maybe one or two variables of interest, and that's it.
Yeah. Do you have an idea how your applications are used in relation to other measurements with other systems, and how people then combine the data to come up with conclusions? Are there any other applications or other wearables or other measurement systems that you often see used in the field in combination then with your application?
Yeah, well, I always say, with not just with my apps, but with every piece of technology, that in order to get the more reliable information, what is best is to compare a measurement with the same measurement from the same device. Because even if you have 10,000 euros force platform and you do a test on that platform and the other day on another similarly expensive platform, you can't really compare. That's for starters. But yes, I'm seeing in the field more and more the use of accelerometers. People is really interested in accelerometers. I'm especially talking from a strength and conditioning point of view. If you think about team sport and training, of course, GPS, etc., IMUs is extremely important. But in the weight room, for example, I see many people combining apps with some kind of wearable. And yes, I think that that's a piece of technology that is going to be more and more used in the field, because wearables is very popular kind of devices. So.
All right. We already learned a bit what you have been doing, where it came from, and what are the challenges, and also how it's being used in the field and so on. So that was really insightful. What I always ask is a bit related to, okay, how is what you are doing related to technologies and innovations in other sectors or subdomains? Because I often think there are many opportunities for, as what they call then, cross-industry innovation. Yeah. Related to your applications, do you see your applications also being used outside of the strength and conditioning field, maybe even outside of sports? I don't know. Or do you see things happening outside of strength and conditioning and sports, which you think, hey, that would be interesting to learn more about and see how does that then relate to what I've been doing?
Yeah, well, starting with the latter, I actually always try to follow that approach, you know, look outside to get inspired and try to see if that could be, you know, like inserted in the sports strength and conditioning field. For example, I'm a big Apple fan, and I always try to see what they are trying to accomplish with the development of technologies that they are not using for sports performance, but that can be integrated into sports performance. For example, they are really, really, really into augmented reality these years, not for anything related to sports, just, you know, for fun, for games, for experience outside. If you go, you know, sightseeing in the city and you put your phone and you see here information of what it's outside, you know, detailed historic data and things like that. I always try to look in fields outside the sports to try to see if this can be integrated here. And if I think that the apps, or I see the apps using in other fields, for example, I'm seeing more and more interest in the medicine field. It's kind of related in some aspects with sports.
Of course.
But yeah, from the point of view of neurologists or cardiologists, etc., I know they are getting more and more interested in the apps. No, in the apps in their current form, because they are not interested in, you know, the one repetition maximum of a bench press, but they are interested in the sense that you can use this to measure something that your patient could be sending to you.
It's an interesting area that we now talk about, is the relation between sports, health, and medical applications. And then, with the evidence that you already developed with the applications you have, the use cases that we just talked about, then your application would become a medical application, would be used in clinical trials and so on and so on. Are you aware of the needs? And I mean, because then the process will become a bit more difficult if the application would be used as some kind of medical device. So there's, as you know, there's a whole regulation about safety and effectiveness of the application. And here in Belgium, there is a whole initiative called mHealth Belgium that actually deals with those startups and people who are actually developing applications for those healthcare and medical use cases. Do you get a lot of questions then about, okay, how could we adapt the application for those medical use cases, or isn't that yet the case?
Yeah, I was actually contacted by a few organizations from different parts in the world, trying to understand better how the apps work. Not because they are interested, as I say, in measuring the one repetition maximum.
Exactly. But
interested in the idea of using the smartphone, which everyone has, to collect data from different patients. Yeah.
Because that could also be a strategy to improve your sports app. If you have new projects where you can develop new features and so on for medical applications, maybe that could also at some point benefit technology then for the sports use cases.
And I think that it's a really interesting field. For example, the other day I read a paper about the epidemiology of strength training in Europe. A sample of 27 countries, hundreds of thousands of surveys. They observed that just 17% of the European population actually did some kind of strength training. So sometimes I see myself too interested in very specific data, when the big picture is that, okay, maybe I shouldn't be that interested in the one repetition maximum or the velocity at different, but just to you know, to get a wider perspective and get that people move. And the field of health and telemedicine, I think it's exciting, and probably, I don't know, but maybe that will be a next step.
Exactly, and I think there's a lot to be learned from each other. Yeah. Those in the, as you said, in the telemedicine and mHealth and whatever it is, health tech, medical tech areas, and then sports-related people, I think we can learn a lot from each other. So interesting topic to explore further as well. All right, we're coming to the end of our chat here. Did I miss anything? Anything you want to add to the story?
No, I don't think so. I think it was a very fruitful conversation, Christoph.
All right. Thanks, Carlos. Then I have a last question. You as a scientist, do you have a particular scientist that you really adore? And or, it's actually two questions, besides your own products, what are other technologies that you really like?
Yeah, well, that might seem a bit odd because it's from a lot of years ago. But I've always been very inspired by Isaac Newton, which is actually the basis of, well, of course, of everything that is around us in the world, in the field of physics, but especially in my own apps, because my apps, which are basically based on simple biomechanics, are possible because of the work of others like Isaac Newton. And of course, in contemporary scientists, I admire a lot. For example, there is a sports scientist, a very famous sports scientist in our field, who is Jean-Benoît Morin. He's a good friend of mine. His work is very inspiring because he has the same idea as myself.
Yeah, the same vision.
Yeah, to try to bridge the gap and create simple methods that practitioners could actually use.
You know? Yeah, maybe you could send his profile and then we can add it for people who want to get a little bit more information. Any other technologies that you really like for some reason, besides your own applications, of course?
Yeah, but you mean in the sports field or outside?
It can be out of sports. Just a product that you say, this is really, I mean, top of the bill. I really like that product.
I said in the past, before in our interview, that I am a very big Apple fan. So I, of course, love the iPhone, especially the first one. And I've never felt that again, when that sensation.
I was about to ask, like, what's the next big step for Apple, you think? Yeah. What would be the next breakthrough?
Yeah, yeah. Because that jump from all the smartphones to the first time I saw an iPhone, that was mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah. Any ideas? What would be the next thing for Apple?
Yeah. Well, outside the, you know, this kind of gadgets, it is long been rumored that they will release an autonomous electric car. That's a very important field for the, you know, for the environment. But in, you know, more related to what we are doing in sports performance, I think, well, it's not that I think, it's like many experts out there are doing reports, etc. And they think that the next step is the, you know, the smart glasses with the augmented reality future. And that will be awesome. You know, the first time you put a glass, you know, the glasses, and you see information like if you were wearing the, you know, the Iron Man helmet or something like that.
And probably that will also change the way people are talking to each other virtually. So we would have a totally different conversation. All right. Thank you very much, Carlos, for your time and your insights. Was really, really inspiring to see, and I really mean and while saying huge respect for what you have been doing so far. I think there should be more people as you who bring research findings into practical solutions, again validating them both scientifically as within the field, continuously improving, and in the end, create value for the people in the field. So really glad we had this conversation, and look forward to following your work. To those listening, thanks again for your time, and hope, of course, it was interesting. As you know, we really are active in that intersection of academia, business, and sports practice. I think there are still a lot of bridges to be built. And this is exactly what we are trying to do with the podcast and also with the network initiative that we are building. Thanks for listening and see you next time. Bye-bye.
This was a SportsTech Research Podcast. Podcast presented to you by STRN, an initiative of Ghent University. Did you like this episode? Make sure to check out our website, strn.co, and let's get in touch.